Hello, I'm Dr. Lee Hildebrand. We're here today with the Lakeshore Podcast, and I've got a special guest today that I want to tell you about before I officially introduce her. This person is a lifetime performing arts leader in our community. She's the author of Chronic Creativity, a Diagnostic Look at the Condition and How to Become Infected. She's the founder of Ozaki Talent, which specializes in helping performing art programming, event planning, and mentoring. She enjoys collaborating with others on creative projects. And most recently, she collaborated with Balance Inc. to produce a music video for a fundraising event. Her work has included major theatrical productions, podcast jingles, public art projects. She is very active in the community, and she's most known for her advocacy work for the jazz and blues artists who recorded in her hometown of Grafton, Wisconsin. So I want to introduce my guest today, as we're going to talk about the impact of what it's like to be an artist as you're developing your talent and just growing as a person, and then some of the challenges that she's experienced in life. As an artist and otherwise, and then how art has played a crucial role for her in her healing and her growth process. So without ado, I want to welcome Angie Mack to Lakeshore Psych Podcast today.
Good morning, Lee. It is such an honor to be here with you and to talk about something that I'm very passionate about and with somebody who has been a great friend and, so thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Angie. So Angie and I have gotten to know one another in the community over the past maybe decade-ish, and just really been a fan of the things that she does in the community, as well as the way she seems to be intentional about both her art and her growth in life. So as we get started, Angie, I wanted to get a sense of what was it like when you were younger, and when did you know you had some of these artistic proclivities? Because you've got quite a range. And by the way, I have heard Angie a number of things she's done from a singing standpoint and too, and it's incredible. So tell us some about what that process was like when you were a kid and kind of discovering that, hey, you have these artistic proclivities.
Sure. Well, I think when I was in kindergarten, I would rather play in the corner. They had this, it was a woodworking station. And in the woodworking station, you could build with wood, and it was really multi-sensory. I remember how the wood smelled, and I remember how the wood felt, and I remember being intrigued with being able to build. And my teachers also noticed that I would rather play in that woodworking corner station rather than socializing with some of the other kids. Now, a lot of the other little girls were playing house and they were playing in the kitchen. You know, they were doing group activities, and I preferred to be alone in the corner playing. So I think that that was a really early indicator that I had a creative mind and I really wanted to grow my creative mind. And another incident, when I was around the age of somewhere between 8 and 10, I sang my first solo. It was at a mother-daughter banquet, and it was You Light Up My Life. And I sang the song. This was my first solo, big solo that I could remember. And as I was singing, people started to cry. And as a child, I thought that meant that I was a bad singer. But now I know what it meant was that people were so moved by the way in which I sang, because I was a very passionate kid. I was a very hyper kid. I was very loud. I was very hyper. I talked a lot. I asked a lot of questions.
So you were precocious at the time.
Yes.
Like the quintessential Curious George, the children's book character.
Yes. Yes, just very, very high energy. Yes. Yes, very active for sure.
Well, that's awesome. So yeah. It sounds like you really got a sense of this early on with some of these situations. As your talent and you started to discover your talent in these various areas and you were developing, what were some of the challenges and that you faced both as like a young budding artist and just a human being that were difficult for you?
Well, I definitely stood out. My neighbor's mother used to say, Angie, when they made you, they threw away the mold. And I never knew what that meant. Now I understand. I was a very unique child. I had a big afro hair. I was quirky, very odd. I was louder than most of the kids. I was more active than the other girls. I was sort of a tomboy. Mm-hmm. Sort of. I was a tomboy. I liked to climb trees. I wanted to be a professional baseball player. Mm. So, so I wasn't like the other kids. And because of that, I was often labeled as being weird or odd. And people often like to shy away from things they don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, when someone would feel joy, I would feel joy on a scale of like, 50, my joy was over the top. My sadness was over the top. My emotions were very heightened, more than most people. And because of that, I did get made fun of.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like in your own way, you were beautifully intense, Angie.
Yeah.
And that's a compliment, obviously, in terms of that, just that real dynamic sense of that. And I know in the work that I do and with some of my speaking and enthusiasm and whatnot, once in a while there can be that voice of, hey, am I being a little too much here?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing. So it sounds like there's an aspect of that too. Mm-hmm. Were there other challenges that you faced that had an impact on you or your development as an artist?
Yeah, there were difficult family situations that were happening in my home, just really intense. And I find that mental health issues often run in families. So, if you have family members with mental health issues or struggles, a lot of times it might affect the kids. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of intense things going on as a child. Not a lot of verbal communication. So because of that, I spent a lot of time alone and also with my siblings and with my childhood best friend. But those times alone, I've come to realize that the times alone actually helped my creative mind develop. Because when you're bored, like for instance, I'd be outside for long periods of time and I discovered that I could eat air sandwiches if I was hungry and it would actually take away my hunger. So my mind started to develop during these times alone playing. And so in a way that was a really good thing. So like I said, there wasn't a whole lot of verbal communication, but I definitely had, my meals provided for and, shelter and, all of that stuff. But it wasn't a highly communicative family.
So it really sounded like you had to kind of have those conversations, if you will, with yourself at some of those deeper levels, artistically, emotionally.
Yeah.
Even kind of the existential, like life experience type inner dialogues.
Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Is that something that's still part of your artistic experience, today?
Yes, I am definitely a deep thinker. It can almost be a problem. I've been officially diagnosed and have medication for ADD, which is, just a very hyperactive mind. So I think my mind and my overthinking, it can definitely be a problem. So,
when did you discover that? Mm-hmm. When did you discover that you had ADD or ADHD?
Unfortunately, I have had it for my entire life and wasn't diagnosed until the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, I was incredibly active with directing and producing musicals. And musicals have the visual, they've got the choreography, they've got the sound. It's just so multi-sensory. And the pandemic brought a drastic halt to all of that sensory stuff that I had in my work. And I had to start doing music lessons via Zoom. And that was incredibly difficult for someone who really loves to embrace, you know, a full dimension scale of art. And so I was, you know, talking with a therapist at the time, and she was the one who actually pointed it out to me and said, you know, why don't you ask your doctor for some medication? And if it helps you, then perhaps, you know, this might help you out. And I took the medication for the first time, and I actually started to cry because I felt like all of the swirling that had been going on in my head had ceased. And I could focus on one cloud in the sky. And I cried. Wow. And I cried because it was such a new experience.
Yes.
So the pandemic, that was the beautiful thing that came out of the pandemic for me, was getting diagnosed. And I've been, you know, it's been helping me for the last 2 years.
So it really illuminated that. And the way I like to describe it with clients is with ADD or ADHD, you know, almost imagine looking up at the ceiling in the room and there's like 30 plates spinning.
Yes.
And it's trying to decide which plate do I attend to? And they're all saying different things.
Yes.
And kind of similar to your cloud example, where you felt like you could focus on one.
Yes.
And just really hone in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that must have just been a wonderful experience to have that focus.
Yes.
And did you find that it impacted many clients that I have too, indicate that the right kind of ADHD medication can assist with the impulsivity that can go with that as well? Did you find that to be the case?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I'm a little more cautious in rushing into new relationships, you know, whether it be friends or business or, you know, so that has halted. And my house is cleaner. I have to say that.
It does make it easier, I'm sure.
I can find things easier. I can focus on projects a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How has it affected you in terms of your artist brain, if you will? And part of the context of that question is, I know historically, even if you look at some of the more famous artists, there were various things going on with their brains, sometimes some attention issues, et cetera. And some would even claim it enhanced their art. Mm-hmm. What have you found in having ADHD treated? And then has that had any impact, negative or positive, on your art?
I would say that it's had a positive impact on my anxiety. You know, for many years, I was treated with anxiety and depression, which I find now is common if you have ADD and you're not properly diagnosed. And so a lot of the anxiety that I had, I've come to learn, had to do with the fact that I had all of this activity swirling around in my head. And so it has helped me to have less social anxiety. I still do have social anxiety, but I'm able to deal with it better than I was when I was off of the medication. So because of that, I've been able to collaborate. I feel a little bit better with organizations. I've been able to step out and do new things because I have less anxiety. And that was really a big surprise, was that, you know, since then I've gone off depression and anxiety meds. the ADD meds have taken away for the most part. You know, I still have struggles, you know, of course.
Sure.
But overall, I don't have the anxiety as much as I did. And because of that, I'm more productive. I'm able to collaborate better with people and don't self-sabotage things as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it's really had a positive impact on your functioning and even your approach to your art in terms of organizing projects and making the right kind of connections to help you continue to move things in good directions. And as you pointed out, and I've seen this in a number of situations as well, when that ADHD, especially for adults with that late diagnosis of that or finding out about it, that once you get the HD or the ADHD managed, a lot of times depression will come down, anxiety, other things that seemed like they were just in and of themselves were very much tied to the state of being and dealing with the attention and impulsivity issues. And it sounds like that's what you found.
Right. You know, I like to describe it as being a person that, yes, I have been described as being intense, passionate. And when you have all that energy, and when you're taught as a child through society or whatever, that you have to simmer it down, you know, and then all of that anxiety is just like trapped in your body. It's not good. And you get sick. And that happened with me. I got sick because I put a lid on all of that passion.
Mm.
Now what I realize is that I have to let it out, you know, in little doses here and there, you know, kind of like letting steam out of a pot, you know, or something.
Yes.
Or out of a kettle. I've got to let it out, because if it stays inside, I get sick. And that did happen. I got very sick.
Absolutely. That's such a good point. And I think if we look at this in our society and we take a look at the traditional bell curve, when people have, like you're indicating, talents or certain energies, etc., that are on one side or the other of that curve that aren't just the typical situation, sometimes culture tends to play a game of whack-a-mole with us. And that is, if you've played the game before, you know, if you stick your head out too far, the little rubber hammer is going to come down and society's going to say, oh, that's too much energy, or you're being too creative, or you're too much out of the box.
Yes.
Get back into that bell curve box. And I think you make a beautiful point that it's really important for us as a community and as a culture to be sensitive to those artistically and in other ways that have unique abilities or gifts, and not to try to push them in line with, you know, the bell curve in that regard. And I love that you're taking the opportunity. I mean, I find the same thing for myself, that it's just crucial to be able to express ourselves and use our gifts. And if they're cordoned down too much, it really does lead to anxiety. It can contribute to depression, a sense that we're not enough, or really doubting ourselves in terms of attributes and gifts that could really make an impact in the world around you.
Yes, for sure.
So I'm so glad that you've been finding your way in terms of being able to own what those gifts are and express that more. And in a way, it sounds like with your medication and other management that you're doing it in ways that you feel like are just kind of more organized. Is that?
Yes. Yes. My days are very structured and organized. Surprisingly, when I was not on the medication, I didn't have an organized day. And so I was very reactive to a lot of things. Now I feel like I'm more offensive, you know, like I start my day out with exercise or, you know, being in water to help me get focused so that my day can be planned and organized and I'm not reacting to whatever comes my way.
Excellent. And so you find the exercise helpful as well in terms of your mental focus and your well-being?
Yeah, for me, it's essential. Movement is one of my biggest ways that I embrace creativity, surprisingly. There's a lot of different forms of creativity. You know, there's, with me, it's movement. I love dancing. I love exercising. I love, this morning I was moving in my garden for 2 hours and I loved it. For me, gardening is one of my canvases, as I like to call it.
Oh, that's another beautiful manifestation of creativity is the gardening.
Yes.
It's so, and I love how the dimensions of gardening in terms of in both planning, you know, working in ones, threes, and fives, and dimensions, and visually, spatially, kind of how it fits together. So,
yeah. and it's very tactile, and I'm a pianist, so I love things that are tactile. So, you know, I like to say that I speak better with my hands. You know, through piano playing, through gardening, through I even paint with my hands.
Oh.
I love things that are tactile.
That's beautiful. Yeah. It sounds like you're very tactile and visual spatial.
Yes.
In your approach to the world too. So Angie, I know we have some people probably that are tuning into the podcast today that may be artists themselves or have interest in art. How have you felt that art has played a role for you in terms of your growth process, maybe even your healing process, in dealing with some of the things you experienced in your family early on, and also the attention issues? Can you speak to that?
Sure. The arts have given me a sense of belonging. Like I said, for a variety of reasons, I've struggled with being a very social for most of my life. It's been a struggle. And so I have found that works best for me is if I get involved in a project with somebody, then it takes the focus off of me and we're focused on the project. And because of that, I'm able to feel like a sense of belonging. That's why I loved being in musicals. You know, when you're in theater, everybody, all the cast members become your family members. You know, you're just the camaraderie of being a part of collaborative projects has really helped me. So I would like to encourage anybody to try to get involved in some sort of collaborative project, you know, if you can. For a while, you know, I did a Zumba class. That was fun. Zumba dancing. You know, I like to go to music events with friends. I find that that is a social activity that is helpful because, again, it's not dialogue so much. It's, hey, look at the band, you know.
More interactive, kind of hands-on or ears-on interactive together versus just sitting around and talking.
Yeah, so I love going out with friends, and in the summertime in the Milwaukee area is a great time to get out and about and listen to music with friends. It's one of my favorite times of the year. And also, like I said, being a creative person, you have a lot of energy that has to go somewhere. And so, you know, for me, it's really important that I, you know, that I keep moving. Like I said, I like to paint with my hands. I encourage people to move. I find that as adults quit moving. I was just talking with one of my adult voice students last week, and I encouraged her. I said, you know, do you ever dance around the house? And she said, no, I feel really embarrassed. And I said, well, just take some time when nobody's around and just kind of move your hips. You start with that, you know.
Kind of getting in flow.
Yeah, moving the body is a really good thing. Emotions are energy, in my opinion. So, you know, times in my life where I had intense anger, for example, I found that, you know, playing drums might be a helpful thing for that. You know, there have been times when, like when I was going through breast cancer, that I painted with my hands. I like to encourage people to also look at art. You know, witnessing artistic things is a wonderful thing to do. For me, being in nature, just going out in nature and observing the spatialness and the symmetry is really good for developing the creative eye. I like to take my my phone camera along and take photos. I'm fascinated with composition and how things fit together. Yeah, and going to art museums. I love going to art museums. I find that a very wonderful way to express creativity. Singing is an excellent thing. Listening to sounds, certain sounds, can be creative. That's part of why I like to listen to the sound of water, because it's like white noise, and it kind of it restructures my brain. I feel like just it calms things down. So listening to water.
That is such a great point. You know, I went down to the beach the other day, and my wife and I were just sitting by the water on Lake Michigan and just listening to that. I really believe that our bodies at the cellular level are literally wired to respond to the sounds and the viewpoints of nature.
Yes.
It really can have a profound impact, and even like a reflection of God in terms of that.
Yes, I believe that wholeheartedly as well. Yes.
Now, speaking of this, I know that you have a surprise for us today, which is you're going to read a poem that you have written yourself called Flow.
Yes.
I'm really excited to hear you read this out loud. I know I've looked at the poem, and
yes,
I'm going to turn that over to you.
All right. Well, this is a poem that was recently published in a collection of works of creative writers and artists. It's called The Literary Parrot. And this is in series 2. So my poem was accepted into that. Now, a lot of my poems are, I would describe as being playful. I believe that playfulness is a part of creativity and also rhythmic. So the way that this poem is pretty rhythmic. So that's how I'll read it. So it's called Flow. And it goes like this. I love flow. Now go. I swim for the flow. I like jazz for the flow. I like dresses for the flow. Crazy hair that flows. Watercolors flow and the wind when it blows. Everybody knows, mainly Marilyn Monroe. Baby, turn up the car radio. I hear a whistle in the aerial, a peculiar sound that's so rario. Syncopated scenarios. Three little birds out my window. Feelings flow. My flowers grow while whimsical weeds steal the show. My hat flies off. There it goes. I used to be teased for having a fro. Phonemes riff, alliterations dance, fancy phrases, spontaneous laughs, photographic phases, capture the faces, expressionism running high, open circuits, saving time, intuitive physics, my secret in life, living fluid makes me fly. Without restraints, it's easy to fly.
Wow. It just strikes me as you read that, Angie, that it in some ways captures a lot of what we've been talking about today in regard to this flow of life and the flow of creativity and expression. Am I reading that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I love environments where there aren't a lot of restraints, where I don't have to fit in a box, where I can flow and be myself. For sure. Yes.
You know, and I hope that's an encouragement to others that are listening today too, that have their own aptitudes or directions of creativity that they may want to express, and including the dovetailing of that with how we can kind of manage our emotions and be in a place where we feel some peace on a day-to-day basis. I think you really highlighted that well in terms of the need for us as people to be able to express who we are in environments and have that received.
Yes, yes.
And accepted and valued.
Yes.
And that's just so important.
Yes. And that is one thing that I have really appreciated about you is that you have seen me, and I appreciate that. And I feel like if we could just go throughout our day and just see somebody, I think it could be just make a wonderful impact. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. The gift goes both ways. And I am so appreciative that you took this time today with us, Angie. I wish we had more time and opportunities to hear a song and some other things. You're such a Renaissance artist that there's so many aspects of your art. And I'm so glad we were able to hear that poem today.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
So thanks so much, and I wish you the best. And for those of you out there listening, how can people reach out if they want to connect in with some more of your material?
Yes, well, my business is Ozaki Talent, and I basically do on-site music and arts programming. I collaborate with businesses and organizations for arts events. I do one-on-one arts mentoring, so Ozaki Talent. .com is a great place to start. And I also have other social media platforms as well. My email is angie@ozakitalent.com.
Beautiful. Well, thanks so much, all of you that tuned in today. This was a great conversation with Angie Mack. And just want to encourage you, as you're exploring your life, to continue to express yourself and find creative outlets to do so. You know, as you're walking through and managing life and also managing your internal landscape. So this will be it for today's Lakeshore Psych podcast. And we'll be looking forward to catching you on another version upcoming. Angie, hope you have a great day, and thanks again.
Yes, thank you. Have a wonderful day, Lee.